When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello there, welcome to a brand new Arscast right here on arsblog.olayolay.com. Hope you're well. Since we last spoke, everything has gone pretty much as well as could be expected on the pitch. Well, I'll qualify that in the sense that results-wise, things have gone as well as can be expected, if not better. A win against Bolton, 4 goals. A win against Braga, 6 goals. Continuing the theme, of course, with the Blackburn game before that and the Blackpool game before that. Our B-ness. The beosity of this Arsenal team is quite something to behold at the moment, and even though we go to Sunderland at the weekend, their nickname is the Black Cats. More on that game a little bit later on. When I qualify what I said, there were a couple of incidents on the pitch, of course, that didn't go quite as well as the result, but they weren't necessarily unexpected, given the fact that we were playing Bolton. We'll come to those in just a couple of moments' time. But just to tell you what else is on the show, we've got Arshavin, we've got Internet Joe along in a moment, and today, a true 100% Arsenal legend. An interview with him coming up very shortly. An integral member of the 1970-71 team. A man who, when I spoke to my father this evening and said, guess who I interviewed? He said, oh, I remember watching him, and he was not a guy that you messed with. The same way nobody messed with Chopper Harris or Tommy Smith or Norman Hunter. Nobody messed with Arsenal's Peter Storey. And he's just released an autobiography. We'll be talking about that and his time at Arsenal in a few moments' time. So, to go back to the bits and pieces that went on the pitch against Bolton, there was, of course, an element of physical play to their game. And even though Owen Coyle has taken over as manager, he's still got more or less the same players. And when one of those players is Kevin Davis, and when Kevin Davis is your captain, as I think he is, you know you're in for some possible pain. Davis could have had a red card in the first half. He kicked Rosicki up in the air, and play went on so long I think the ref kind of forgot about it. And then when he went in on Jack Wilshere in a very heavy challenge, he only got a yellow card. And then in the second half there was a challenge with Koscielny, where he went up for the ball and he came hurtling in. Koscielny was sort of on a standing jump, more or less. And he came hurtling in and the two of them clashed heads. And I think if you're that late for a tackle on the ground, you're going to get a second yellow. I don't believe he went in to clash heads with him, because even the biggest spa in the world knows that when you clash heads with somebody, it really, really hurts. It just shows you what kind of a guy Davis is. He sort of headbutted him with the front of his head and then went around holding the back of his head. And then there was the Robinson-Diaby tackle, and that annoyed me for a couple of reasons. Having sat through Stuart Robson's commentary on Setanta for most of the game and having to put up with what I felt were fairly anti-Arsenal comments from him, given the fact that he is employed by Arsenal to commentate on Arsenal games. I'm not saying he shouldn't be impartial. Of course he should be when he's working for somebody else, but it went a little bit too far. It was a bit snide. It was a bit past remarkable about Arsene Wenger and about Cesc Fabregas, his comment about how, well, if Arsene Wenger complains about teams going in physical, well, you can't blame them for going in physical. It's all Arsene Wenger's fault for talking about it, which was a bit annoying. But the Robinson tackle on Diaby was a shocker. Diaby's a very lucky boy not to have his legs seriously broken for the second time. And what annoyed a lot of people, of course, was there was no real coverage of it. Nothing in many of the match reports. There was nothing on Match of the Day. It wasn't shown over and over again like the Gallas tackle last season on Bolton's Mark Davis. And I've got no problem, because that was a bad tackle. And if people want to show them over and over again to, you know, make an example of somebody, then fine. But do it for everybody. Don't just pick and choose when you do it. That's the issue, I think. Diaby's going to be out for a little while. Robinson didn't get a yellow card, didn't get a red card, and we're in a situation where serious foul play, and that is serious foul play, has gone unpunished. And the issue, of course, is that if you can look back at events that the referee hasn't seen, then why can't you look back at things like that and apply some retroactive punishment? And Arsene Wenger spoke about it during the week, and of course, the message got lost in the fact that it was Arsene Wenger delivering it, because too many people, even when he talks, you know, they go, oh, there's Arsene Wenger whinging again. And what he's talking about is not necessarily just for the benefit of Arsenal players, even though we have had to suffer more injuries than pretty much any team, or, well, more of those horrific injuries than any other team I can think of, particularly ones that have come from bad tackles. He said it himself. He said, I talk and they go, Wenger, 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 Wenger. I don't know if anyone listens to me. And you have to think, unfortunately, they kind of don't. Which is a shame, because he's doing it for the benefit of all players. Because tackles like Robinson's on Diaby should not be tolerated. Not by Arsenal fans, not by Bolton fans, not by anybody. Certainly not by the FA. Certainly not by the FA, who then go to YouTube and try and make people take down video clips of the tackle, when they're using them in their blogs and Twitters and all that to try and demonstrate what it is they're talking about. So frustrating in that point of view. But it is, I think, beginning to catch hold. There were some articles this week about how that kind of tackling and the reaction to it has to be examined more closely, and how maybe people should just not dismiss what Arsene Wenger says as Wenger whinging again just because it's Arsene Wenger. Because, as I said, it's not just for the benefit of Arsenal players. It's for any footballer that has to go up against a thug like Ryan Shawcross or a thug like Paul Robinson. Robinson hopping around, pretending to be injured. How do you injure yourself when you plant your studs halfway up somebody's shin? You don't. It's a cowardly act. And pretending to be injured afterwards was only to try and avoid a booking or a sending off, which I'm sure he knew he deserved. Bolton focused on the sending off of Cahill. They complained about a free kick in the build-up to the sending off. They didn't complain necessarily about the sending off itself. I thought of the three players who I thought could have been sent off for Bolton. Cahill's was the most innocuous, but you can see why it's given. Jump in 2 feet off the ground, you're going to get a red card. We saw it with Joe Cole. We've seen it again with Cahill. Stuart Atwell is no referee, but he got that thing absolutely right. Anyway, I've waffled on too long about all that sort of stuff. Just to let you know what's going on in the rest of the week, here's Internet Joe.
I'm Internet Joe, and here's me 30-second roundup. Bolton at home, Kevin Davis, that's a red card, ref, that's a red card, that's a soft red card, but I'll take it. Robinson on the Abbey, that's two red cards. Match of the day, why don't you show it, yes, Muppets. I think all tackling is wrong, you should be banned from the game, you get players injured, it's not nice to see. Ah, Valencia, ah ha! Braga, hit for six, Fabregas, you're a legend, I like cheese strings.
Internet Joe will return on next week's Arsecast. Now, I'm delighted to welcome to the show a real Arsenal legend. He joined the club as an apprentice in 1961, made his debut in 1965, became an integral part of the team for the next 10 years, and of course, was part of the team that won the 1970-71 double, League and Cup. He was known as Arsenal's hard man, but he could play a bit as well. Peter Storey, welcome to the Arsecast.
Hello, Andrew.
You've just released your autobiography. It's called True Story. There's a sense I get from the book that you wanted to set a few things straight, both from a football point of view and from other bits and pieces that went on in your life. Was this something that you've had an ambition to do for quite a while, and how did it come about?
Not really, no. I was approached by someone, Will Price, and to do a book, and I'd been approached a couple of times before, and nothing had come of it. But I said to him, "There's not a lot of interest, Will." And he said, "Yeah." So I said, "Well, we'll give it a go." And that's what it came about. I had no ambitions to set things straight or anything like that, really. No.
Right. Okay. And how was the process for you? I mean, was it? I know some people find things like this a little bit cathartic. Reliving old memories can be positive in ways. Was that the case?
Very difficult, very difficult, because obviously I'm in France and he's in England, so we did it over the telephone, so that made it even harder, actually. So it was quite difficult, but I think it was okay in the end. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going to take you back to to talk about Arsenal a bit and right to the start of the book, and you're an Arsenal fan, and it was quite... Yeah. It was quite early in your fledgling football career that Arsenal became interested in you. How was that as a young guy who had ambitions to be a professional footballer and who was an Arsenal fan, waiting for that move to Arsenal to become official? Because it must be like waiting for 100 Christmases or something like that.
You've obviously read the book. I mean, I was at school. I was playing football all shot on farm with a schoolboy, and I played for Hampshire, and then I got in the England trials and everything, you know, and eventually got into the England schoolboys team. I only played once. And obviously you get a lot of scouts from different clubs following these games, and I don't know if it's illegal or not, but I know I asked to approach my father, who used to come with me to these games, and... it was more or less decided quite early on that I was going to go to Arsenal, if you know what I mean.
And when you got there, I mean, it took you some time to make the breakthrough into the first team, but...
It did, actually, yeah. It was a while, yeah.
Were you always confident that you could make the step up if you got the chance?
Not really, no. I mean, the thing that surprised me when I first got to Arsenal was that, obviously, I've been a schoolboy player, played for England, and... London schoolboys and Hampshire schoolboys, but the standard was not the first team players, but some of the players in the youth team and third team were so good. It amazed me, really. I thought, you know, I found it quite hard to begin with. Yeah.
But I mean, that's a way, I suppose, for you to sort of improve, isn't it? When you're playing with better players and they set the standard.
Yeah, I think after about a year, when you start, you're doing full, you train every day, you get stronger and you improve, and after a while, you get up to their standard. But the first thing, was quite daunting for me actually, to find the standard was so high. You know?
And do you remember your debut? Well, I mean, having relived it for the book, is it still something that sticks in your head?
Yeah, it was at Leicester. I don't remember much about it, but I think it was 1965, I think, and then Arsenal got off to quite a bad start, and I think Billy McCullough was the left back at the time. He'd been regular for quite a few seasons, Billy, and obviously Billy Wright was the manager, and they were having a bad start, and he brought me in. It was away to Leicester. I think we lost 2-3-1, I think. But I can't remember a lot about it, to be honest. But I stayed in the team for the rest of the season, so I must have done all right. It's not too bad. So
You, I think one of the things that you talk about in the book is that you gained a reputation as being one of the sort of archetypal hard men. In football, I do get the sense, because you sort of come to the defence of other players who have that reputation. Tommy Smith at Liverpool is one in particular that sticks out from reading the book, that maybe you didn't get enough credit for your abilities as a footballer.
I think so. Yeah. You kind of got to kind of stereotype. I think every kind of team in those days seemed to have a what the press called a hard man, if you know what I mean, and. And a lot of the players who got that kind of reputation were actually quite good, very good players, you know.
Yeah.
You kind of got stereotyped as the team's hard man, and and just kind of dismissed as just the kind of hatchet man, if you like, you know. And it was a period in the game, I think, when every team had a hard man. And looking back, I don't think it was a particularly good thing, but I think it came about. I think I said it in the book. I think Leeds. More or less started it off when they first come up into the first division, or I don't know, the early 60s, 64 or something like that. And they started putting a lot of stick about, and I think the other teams kind of followed suit, if you know what I mean.
Just while you're talking about Leeds, you do talk in the book about how there was a real intense rivalry there. Was that because of their footballing ability, or more because of the fact that they had players who would put it about, and you really had to stand up for yourself?
Well, that's what I think, both, really. I think that it's pretty straight. They were very, very good. They're some very, very good players. And I'm really looking back, I don't think they really needed to do the hard man stuff so much as they did. But I think they was encouraged to by Don Revy. I don't know why, but they did. But they, in their own right, they were very good footballers. Very, you know, a very talented team, especially people like Johnny Giles and, you know, some of those very talented people.
Let's talk about 1971, because obviously it was a huge thing for Arsenal to do, to do the double, to win the league and then win the FA Cup. But in the book, you found yourself a little bit detached from it because of an injury you picked up. You didn't play at the game at White Hart Lane, and you only played an hour of the cup final. I suppose anybody who plays, whether it's at, you know, your level or any level, when you miss out an important game, it's obviously it's quite gutting. But, you know, do you feel with a bit of hindsight that your contribution, you know, over the course of the season makes up for missing out on those games, or does it still sting a little bit?
No, I think over the season, if you look back over the season, you're right. But I was trying to say at the time, where was the kind of climax of the season for most of the players? I kind of felt out of it. I mean, perhaps you shouldn't do that, but I just couldn't help it. I think if you look back, I think someone like Jimmy Greaves, I mean, he was an England regular for years and years and years, and he was in the England team in the World Cup, and then he got injured, and Jeff Hurst came in, and then Jimmy was fit again for the final, but they left him out. I don't think he's ever really, I don't know if he's ever come out and said it, but I think he really missed. You just can't help it. You don't feel part of it. Although he was a big part of it, and I was as well. You just, at the end of it, you know, everyone's kind of, you know, celebrating. You just kind of, I don't know, you feel out of it. Perhaps you shouldn't do, and perhaps it's just selfish in your part, but you just feel out of it. You know? I mean, everybody's, you know, all excited and, you know, and celebrating, but you just can't really feel part of it. I don't know. You just feel out. I mean, well, I'm just saying, it's very hard to explain to people, isn't it? But maybe not being in that situation, but sure. That's just the way it is. You just don't feel part of it. You should do, probably, but you just can't.
Yeah. And the 70-71, Tim, given the achievement that you had and what you'd won, was it a disappointment to you that the team didn't kick on and win more trophies? I know there was another FA Cup final, but, you know, a second place in the league. Is there a feeling, even when you, I don't know if you're still in touch with any of these guys now, but, you know, that there was promise unfulfilled, that Arsenal should have achieved more in that period?
I think so, yeah. Definitely, yeah. Why it never went on, I mean, the first thing is, which is not, to my mind has never been really fully explained. I mean, just like this, I don't know how long, but a month after we won the double, the coach walked out. I mean, Don Howe walked out. He took the physio with him. He took the youth team coach. Why that was, I've never seen no proper explanation for that. There must be some reason. I think that was a big part of it. And I've got to say, I mean, I don't want they bought Alan Ball the next season, and on a personal level, he was very I shared a room with him eventually, because at first I got dropped when he first came, but eventually I got back into the team, and I shared a room with him for two or three seasons, or several seasons, until eventually all went. But on a personal level, I got on very well with him. But I think him coming, though he was a very good player, maybe even a great player, I don't think he really fitted in with Arsenal, if you know what I mean. Because before that, we'd all kind of move about and different positions depending on who we were playing. But when Alan Ball came, he was kind of a little man with a big ego, you know, and he wanted to be the star. It was just him and 10 others, if you know what I mean.
Right.
And everybody else had to fit in around him.
There was an issue with money as well, wasn't there, with Ball?
There was a big issue with money, because with Bertie Mee, when he first taken over the team, we were all on, I suppose, relatively quite low wages, but big bonuses, you know. And he said before Alan Ball came, because when we won the double, I didn't go in there, but a few of the players went in and wanted more.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Your basic wages, you know? And he said, no, it's going to stay the same. It'll always be the same. And they said to him, well, you'll never sign, you know, a big name player because none of them are going to come on these wages. And he wouldn't have it, but anyway, Alan Ball came before Christmas, and within a few weeks, everybody kind of knew that he was on like over double what we were getting.
Mm.
And, you know, it's not only football, any walk of life, where someone, you know, if you're, whatever you do, if someone comes in and they're getting a lot more money, and it causes a bad feeling, you know.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of bad feeling, yeah. And it flared up now and again when we weren't doing well. And then we were doing well, it kind of went away. But it was always in there in the background. And it was never the same. Well, it was never the same again, no.
And would you lay some of the blame at the door of Bertie Mee? Because the bits, you know, in the book that you talk about, and I don't want to give away too much of the book, obviously, because I want people to go out and buy it, and it's a great read. But, you know, you had issues with him, and there were certain situations, particularly when you talk about the lead-up to the 1971 Cup final, and you felt it could have been done differently, and perhaps in a way his management skills weren't good enough to integrate somebody like Ball into the team.
Yeah, the trouble with Bertie Mee, he says he took the job as manager, which is fine, and he did a good job initially. I think he instilled, because Arsenal at that time when Billy Wright went, were in not very good shape, you know. And he instilled a lot of discipline, and he sorted things out, and he was quite good. But the trouble with Bertie Mee is he'd taken the job as manager, but actually he needed someone with him, because he couldn't do the job. I mean, if the coach wasn't there, he couldn't actually take the train or do anything. He was clueless, if you know what I mean. His management skills were okay, though I think he got a bit carried away with it sometimes, with the discipline, yeah.
Your Arsenal career sort of petered out as sort of your personal life began to impinge on your football life.
Yeah.
But I mean, you spent 16 years at the club. What for you was the personal highlight, given the fact that you've obviously felt a bit detached from the double in 71? I mean, I've sought some other opinion on this, and I've been asked to ask you how it felt to stand up and take that penalty against Stoke in the 71 season in the semi final. You know, I suppose maybe it was a bit unusual for a defender or a midfielder to be the penalty taker. Were you ever nervous standing up for those? And how did it feel knowing that this game or this penalty kick was going to save the game for Arsenal?
The thing is, you know, penalties, it's a funny thing, but you say about a defender taking it, but actually a lot of forwards don't fancy taking them. Because, I don't know, it's just one of those things. I'm not trying to praise myself, but it's very nerve-wracking, yeah. You take penalties in training, and you've got the goal, and it looks massive, and you can't miss. But when you get in a big game, especially a big game like that, or you have these penalty shootouts, which are more common now than they were in those days, I mean, you walk up to the ball, and you just kind of think, well, how can I score here? The goalkeeper looks enormous, the goal looks so small, and I suppose it's just to do with nerves, I suppose, but sometimes it looks almost impossible to score. And so really, you have to just hold your nerve and just try and go through and take it, you know.
The 71 team played 64 matches in that season and only used 16 players.
That's right, yeah.
Last season, Arsenal used in all competitions 41 players. Is it a case, do you think, that players were maybe not more resistant to injury, but they would play with injuries more back in your day? Obviously, maybe they had to because of the size of the squad. There's a bit more choice these days.
No.
But do you think that footballers in your day were probably a little more, robust?
Yeah. I mean, you're saying we play with 16 players, but out of that 16, I think two or three have only played a couple of few games. So Bertrand, I think the team was about 13 or 14, you know. We used to play with injuries, yeah. I mean, not bad injuries, obviously, sure. But if you're a knocker these days, they wouldn't play. But we used to turn out, they used to, you know, expect us to play, really, and we did. I mean, whether that was stupid or not, I don't know. But, looking back, I don't think they really appreciate it in the end. But, yeah, I used to play because we wanted to play, you know. Yeah. And, we play when we weren't fully fit. Otherwise, you wouldn't get through a season with that many players, would you?
No, surely not.
Not to win the double. I mean, that's ridiculous with that kind of amount of players.
Yeah. I mean, you need the big squads these days.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
How do you view football these days? I don't know, do you watch much of Arsenal?
No, not live, obviously, but we've got the French television, and they show loads of English games. I mean, we see three or four games on a Saturday live, one after the other, really, and not that I watch them all, but
sure.
Well, I'm selective, you know, I just watch what I want to, but there's no shortage of football.
And how do you view Arsenal now, looking at Arsene Wenger's teams? Do you think if you were playing these days there would be a place for a Peter Story and an Arsene Wenger team?
I don't know. Maybe I want to be, but you couldn't play how you used to play because you'd be suspended all the time. So you'd have to but you couldn't dive in and tackle someone, you know, and you'd have to, you know, change your kind of technique, I suppose.
And there's a lot of talk recently about the physical side of the game and some bad tackles. When you have that sort of reputation as a hard man, a guy who gets stuck in, what do you think? I mean, we seem to see, maybe I'm wrong because in the 1970s I was too young really to remember.
Yeah. But,
I mean, we seem to be seeing a rise in quite serious injury to player that maybe wasn't the case back in the day.
No, it wasn't. I don't really know. You do. I mean, the worst injury I ever saw was I think Don Howard broke his leg. We were playing against Blackpool, and that's my first season. I think most of the really bad injuries are complete accidents, if you know what I mean. Donnie was just running through, and the goalkeeper came out and dived at his feet, and he just fell over him. He broke his shin in two places. I mean, the bone actually came through the leg, and it was horrific injury. And we had that this last season with it. The young boy at Arsenal, was it Ramsey, was it?
Ramsey, Aaron Ramsey.
Yeah. There's been a few others like that, and you're right, there seems to be more of it, but I don't know why. It's just one of those things, maybe, I don't know.
Let's talk about some of the players that you played with and against, if I could just, you know, ask you who maybe were the best players that you ever played with.
The Arsenal players, I suppose, you know, I played with a lot of them since we all played since we were kids, really, 15, John Radford and George Armstrong, Peter Simpson and John Summers, all terrific players, you know, and then later on Charlie George came through. And obviously, I played for England a few times and played with Bobby Moore and people like that, but... yeah, I mean, especially when I was young, I played with Joe Baker, who was a great player for Arsenal, Joe. I think I've said it in the book, I think he was the only pick for Joe was that he never played in a really good Arsenal team, you know. Mm. He was a great player, Joe. I thought he was a terrific player. But, I don't think he ever realised it, you know, you played in, I suppose, pretty poor Arsenal teams in those days.
You talk about George Best in your book as an opponent that drove you mad a bit because, you know, his ability, and I suppose he probably was a bit of a wind-up merchant on the pitch as well.
Yeah.
Was Best, the best of what you faced in England?
In England, I would say, I did say, I thought Johan Cruyff was probably the best I played against. Well, obviously, George Best was a great player, and I did play with him for a little while at Fulham at the end of my career, and I got on a lot with him. Have you ever met him, George? Or, do you know what I mean? He was very quiet.
No, I never.
Very unassuming, you know, and he was a nice fella.
Was he maybe one of the guys, you know, and maybe it gets into the sort of personal life of things, you know, that you, for example, had to get into the pub trade and different trades because, you know, the money in football at that stage was not anything like it is now. You've got guys who are earning in a week enough money probably that you could retire on after a season, you know?
Yeah, it was kind of, we were earning, I suppose, better money than ordinary people, but quite good money, I suppose, really. Mm. But it wasn't kind of retiring money. If you retire, you know, you had probably a fairly decent house and a few £1,000 in the bank, maybe. But that was about it. You know, you had to find a job or do something. You know, you couldn't just retire on that kind of money.
Right.
And I think years before that, a lot of footballers used to take news agents and things like that. And then this pub thing came into fashion, and a lot of footballers and boxers were kind of going into it. It wasn't only me. I think, in fact, McClintock took a pub or a couple of pubs, didn't he? Mm. And Eddie Kelly was involved in a pub and other clubs. And it was kind of the fashion at the time. Now, looking back, it wasn't a good idea, really.
Probably not.
No.
And you know, life now. You're living in France.
Yeah.
Do you ever feel like there's unfinished business at Arsenal? Would you like to come back? And
No. When I first finished playing football, I really missed it for several years. You know, I missed being a footballer, I suppose. You know, I really missed it. And I think part of the trouble, I started drinking too much to kind of compensate. We try to reproduce the kind of
the highs.
The high, yeah, you're exactly right. The high you got from being a footballer, but of course you can't do it. But now I don't miss it at all. I mean, I look back, I don't regret playing football. That's what I wanted to do. That's what I did, and I enjoy it. I don't regret anything. But For several years, I did miss it, really miss it badly, not now, no.
No, and no plans to come back and be a football pundit? Or...
No. I know some of the players I play with, they earn quite a good money these days, you know, working at Arsenal as kind of a match day host. And
Charlie George
and going on Arsenal TV and other things. And if I was in London, if they wanted me, maybe I'd do it myself. But I'm over here and I don't miss it at all, no.
All right, well, Peter, thank you very much.
Okay.
Really appreciate the time. The book is called True Story, and we'll give it a good plug on the blog and in the podcast. A pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye.
That was Peter Story. There is, of course, another side to his book. There's his time at Arsenal, which we obviously focused on. And then there's everything that happened to him aside from Arsenal. And some of it obviously wasn't particularly great, and getting into the drinking and some of the trouble he got into. You'll find more details of that. And it's interesting reading in the book. The book is called True Story. It's available through Mainstream Publishing. You'll find a link to it on the blog today. You can also find it on Amazon.co.uk and probably in bookshops up and down the UK. But if you need to buy it online, it's mainstreampublishing.com or Amazon.co.uk. The book is called True Story by Peter Story, and thanks once again to him. Now, before we move on and look ahead to the game this weekend, here's Arshavin.
Hello, I am Arshavin, and has been okay week. Some good, and some not good. Start with the game against Bolton is always like fight, you know? We win game, but Kevin Davis, he tried to kill Jack, and then later tried to kill new boy, don't remember name. And after game, I go to him and I say, why don't pick on somebody on size for a change? And he say, oh, come on, if you think hard enough. And I say, you stupid cunt. I am not on size with you. I am small and you are like a mutant. So I say, Song, get him. But Song is playing Battleship with Eboy. And then we play in middle of week, Champions League. In the first half, is not so good. Can't make pass, but score goal. And at halftime, Cesc say to me, Andre, you have to do better because you are like totally shit. So I say, oh, okay, you have ass nice, so I do better and make two goal and hit post and then go for a lie down before game finish. It's a tough life being Arshavin. It's a tough life.
And we'll have more from Arshavin on Arscast in the very near future. Now, looking ahead to the weekend, injury news before the game against Sunderland. Abu Diaby is out. We know this already. We've covered all this. And Thomas Vermaelen remains out with his Achilles problem, meaning Skilacci and Koscielny will continue at the centre of defence. Johan Giroud is talking today about how he wants to prove himself, but, you know, he's really going to have to step up his game if he wants to do that. Apart from that, there's no other injuries, which is good news. Sunderland is not the easiest place to go. We know this time last year. Well, not this time last year, but in this fixture last year, it was the same kind of job, wasn't it? A late kickoff on ESPN, and we lost the game 1-0. Not particularly fun at all, that one. Nevertheless, we go into it with a great deal of confidence on the back of all the results that we've had. However, I love this from the captain, who is urging people not to get too ahead of themselves, because we all enjoy the way we've started the season, but it is only the start of the season. And Cesc says, I'm not going to read too much into our beating Blackburn and Bolton. In previous years, we might have done the same thing before collapsing against the big sides. So it's best that we just keep going, keep improving, and keep making things difficult for whoever we face. Which is wise. And Cesc's example since he's come back has been absolutely fantastic. I know he's a bit off the pace against Blackburn, but against Bolton and against Braga, he was absolutely sensational. And the example he shows on the pitch is something that all the players should follow. Even if not all of them do, you might look at Arshavin, for example, but someone like Jack Wilshere can learn so much, and Arsene Wenger said that. It is very, very early days yet. Really early days. So let's not get too carried away. We've done brilliantly and it's fantastic to see, but there's a long, long way to go. And not all the problems that we have been solved and all that kind of stuff. So it's good to know that the captain is going to keep people focused. All we can do is hope for 3 points against Sunderland. We kind of owe them one after last season. We've got players who are in form, who are scoring goals. The confidence is high. There's no reason why we can't go there and get a result. I'm going to keep my fingers crossed for that. Going to leave this Arscast right here, right now. We'll talk to you, of course, all weekend and all next week on the blog and on next week's Arscast. So until then, take it easy. Thanks for listening. Cheers. Bye-bye.
John! John! go to school. Don't you owe me. I'm not listening to any of your crap. What? Don't talk rubbish to me, John. You just don't want to... No, there's no such thing as a half-Belgian, half-machine, time-travelling robot from the future that's going to kill you because you're going to bring about the destruction of the human race. Don't be stupid. What? Just get your uniform on and go to school. Or if you can't go to school, go around one of your mate's girlfriend's asses and shag her while he's not looking. I've got shoplifting to do. Verminator. Did you ever hear anything quite stupid? I don't know. Kids these days. Bloody hell.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.